Welcome to the December podcast for Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics. I'm Natalie Pynchon. In this podcast, editorial board member Dr. Joseph Pyatt of the Alfred I. DuPont Hospital for Children in Wilmington, Delaware, speaks with Dr. Franck Roux of the Hôpital Pourpont in Toulouse, France, about Dr. Roux and colleagues' article, Frontoethmoidal Meningoencephalocele, Appraisal of 200 Operated Cases. The article appears in this month's issue.
My name is Dr. Joseph Pyatt from the editorial board of the Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics, and I am conversing with Dr. Franck Roux from Toulouse, France, who is one of the authors of a soon-to-be-published report concerning repair of frontoethmoidal meningoceles in Cambodia. And Dr. Roux, I want to say that I enjoyed your report a great deal. It addressed a question that has not received a lot of attention in our literature, namely how to make modern neurosurgical therapies more accessible in the developing world.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. I think our readers will. I have a number of questions. I think readers of the report will be astonished at how inexpensive these procedures were. You mention a $100 outlay per case at the Children's Surgical Center where you were working. Can you explain how the $100 are spent? Can you itemize that sum?
Yes. We use no preoperative CT scan, no blood test, and no X-rays. We add for this operation reusable operative coats or masks. There is over 80 Khmer staff working at Children's Surgical Center in Phnom Penh, doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, or support people for maintenance, administration, or security. And salaries are the biggest monthly expense, followed by surgical supplies, or then utilities and operating costs. Every year, a rough cost per operation is assessed by dividing the total amount of money spent by the total number of operations performed. And when we began this study in 2005 on meningoencephalocele, the cost per operation at the Children's Surgical Center was approximately $100.
In your report, the six patients developed meningitis in the early postoperative period, and one patient died of meningitis at 2 months.
Yeah.
I have actually had a similar experience in my practice of a child with repair of this condition developing pneumococcal meningitis some months afterwards. Have you considered immunizing patients against pneumococcus?
It's hard to answer accurately to this question, I think. To speak openly, we didn't know the preoperative status of vaccination of these children. Unfortunately, we lost one child because of meningitis. We don't know which bacteria, which germ killed this child. Vaccination maybe could improve the surgical procedure regarding postoperative infections. It's a real problem in Cambodia.
The report indicates that local surgeons, Khmer surgeons, participated in each of the operations that you reported. What was their specialty training, and are those surgeons now repairing meningoencephaloceles independently?
Yes. These Khmer surgeons were not neurosurgeons or fascial surgery surgeons. They were general pediatric surgeon, and they are still general surgeon. And yes, they are able now to repair without us, I would say, easy or not meningoencephalocele cell. Last time we were in Cambodia in June, they showed me several cases operated on by themselves. They told me they performed more than 40 cases since 2 years. It's a beginning. Unfortunately, there is no accurate statistic on this disease in Cambodia, of the number of meningocele in Cambodia. But we can estimate, that there are currently more than 3,000 or 4,000 meningoencephalocele in Cambodia. So for the local surgeons, I think, still many work to do.
That's quite a burden. That's quite a surgical burden. How does the surgical technique that you use in Cambodia and that you describe in your paper differ from what you do in Toulouse for the same condition?
It's very different because we do not use this surgical technique in France because there is not this type of malformation. There is no meningoencephalocele in Western countries.
Oh.
And this malformation is mainly found in the, not only, but in Southeast Asia, in Thailand or Vietnam, Cambodia, India also, or Burma. And we learned how to operate on these children, first by reading previously published paper on this topic.
Well, this condition is not entirely unknown in the United States or in my personal practice, and I have to say the operation that I perform for this condition is almost identical to what you describe in your paper.
Yeah.
You were working at an institution called the Children's Surgical Center, which I understand is a charitable effort organized actually in this country. What kind of relationship did it have with the Cambodian National Rehabilitation Center? What was that institution, and how did the two institutions cooperate?
I don't know exactly. I am a visiting surgeon in Children's Surgical Center. Children's Surgical Center began its work 12 years ago, directed by a surgeon coming from Alaska, James Cologley, who is still in charge of the center now. CSC, Children's Surgical Center, is a non-profit, non-political and non-religious organization providing specialized rehabilitation surgical services and, of course, surgical training in orthopedy, ophthalmology, craniofacial or burn surgery. CSC relies on the generosity of individuals and or grants of organizations. It works in close relation with the National Rehabilitation Center in Kien Klang. It's part of Phnom Penh. It's the next door. It's very close to treat, for instance, landmine victims or congenital malformation.
Were there American surgeons at the Children's Surgical Center?
Not exactly. Visiting visiting a surgeon or doctors, yes.
So there's opportunity for American surgeons who may be listening to this podcast who are interested to become involved in this work?
Yes, a great opportunity, I think. There are a lot of students also coming in the Children's Surgical Center for elective rotations, some weeks.
Do you know, does Cambodia have a national governmental agency responsible for public health?
Yes.
What does it view to be the major public health challenges for the population of Cambodia?
Its priority or priorities is a better distribution of the medical resources across the country because, you know, many local doctors want to work in the capital and not in the provinces, for example, and also another priority is to take better pregnancy and childbirth. It's very important in Cambodia. And these national goals are not directly in relation with the surgical disease treated in children's surgical center.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments or thoughts about ethical issues related to outreach work by Western neurosurgeons in poor countries?
I would say the first thing is to remain humble regarding the amount of job to do in some countries. And the second thing is very important to teach a local surgeon, but also to learn from them, because many of them already know how to treat or to take care of local disease. So to teach, but also to learn from them. And in practice, I would say it's very important, first, when you want to be involved in a humanitarian mission, to evaluate which kind of disease you want to treat and to focus on this disease. And finally, I would say I think it's fundamental also in practice to do files of the patients with name, surname, how to contact them, and a picture of each patient, and to see again operated on patients in follow-up. Very, very important to contact them and to see again in follow-up. Sometimes it's very, very difficult. It's a challenge because patients do not come back spontaneously, and you have to call them back if you want to see them after an operation. And very, very finally, I would say it's very important to keep in touch with local surgeons after your departure by internet. It's very, very easy now. If they have any complications or any questions, I would say that the main thing is to remain humble regarding the amount of job to do.
Very good, Dr. Ru. I have enjoyed our conversation and certainly found your remarks interesting, and I expect that the subscribers to this podcast will as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all.
This concludes our podcast for the December issue of Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics. Thank you for listening. For more information on how to submit your research to Journal of Neurosurgery Pediatrics, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.